ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओके पेज 117 द परिशिष्टम 6.4 Jiva Goswami Sat Sandarbhas. In Bhagavat Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami discusses verse 18 through 21 of this chapter. Compare with Srila Prabhupada's purports to the same verses. Anucheta 78, verse 18. Vaikuntha, Nimesha. Vaikuntha is name 406 in the thousand names of Vishnu. Hence it may mean the abode of the Lord or the Lord himself. And the material world are both described in Srimad Bhagavatam, 2.6.18. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the controller of immortality and fearlessness. And he is transcendental to death and the fruit of actions of the material world. O Narada, O Brahmana, it is therefore difficult to measure the glories of the Supreme Person. Nimesha. Srila Jiva Goswami considers the subject of this verse, Saha, he, and what he controls, Amritasya, Vaikuntha, to be non-different. Right? The Lord and his, what he's controlling is non-different. Does that make sense? Like Varuna in the water. When you see the waters, it's Varuna, you know, or the thunderbolt and Indra. Does that make sense? So like that. So Vaikuntha and then the Supreme Lord are non-different. That way, when you see this material world as that which is controlled by Krishna, then it becomes non-different from him. You know what I'm saying? It's an inferior manifestation. Krishna says in the Gita, it's just a drop of his splendor. It's not like the full manifest in the spiritual world. Right? But then, we're not actually living in the material world. Does that make sense? We're actually in the spiritual world because we see it's all, and all is in connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the advantage. So Maya is because it is Krishna's energy, but we see it separate from him. Therefore, then it takes on a different, what are you saying? Yeah, a different flavor. Does that make sense? Yeah? This verse of Srimad Bhagavatam directly mentions the Lord's immortality and fearlessness, and the Lord's position of being always liberated from material influence is applied through non-directly, and the other two qualities only applied in the following statement of the Shruti Shastra, Svetasvatara Svatara Upanishad 3.15. The Personality of Godhead is the original master of all immortality. The passage of Srimad Bhagavatam describes the Lord, the possessor of these qualities, immortality, fearlessness, and liberation. Whereas, the passage from Shruti Shastra describes the qualities the Lord possesses. Right, so one is the possessor, and the other is the qualities he possesses. Okay, does that make sense? So he's trying to point out is that also when it's talking about Vaikuntha, it's also talking about the Lord. Right? Yes.
You were mentioning that Lord and Vaikuntha is not different. So when the spiritual world, the material world is a reflection of spiritual world. So is material world non-different from Maya?
Is the material world non-different from Maya? No, Maya is thinking that the material world is ours to enjoy and that it's separate from Krishna. That's Maya. Okay. You know what I'm saying? This is a fine point that one is able to appreciate that material endeavor is not good and that one should develop one's love for Krishna. Spiritual endeavor is what one should do. Right? Then these are fine points within it. This is not a point that's necessarily made to those who are not convinced of that. You know what I'm saying? You make very clear, this is the material world, there's the spiritual world. Right? We'll use more of this dwait, the separateness of it. Because it makes it very clear intellectually to the living entity. Right? But once that's understood, then the element of achinta veda veda tattva, simultaneously it's one and different, you know, the dwait and the dwait, functioning at the same time, then it's there, because it's non-different from him. It functions in that way, but at the same time it's different, because this is temporary, it's inferior. It's just, it is the Lord, but it's just a portion of his potency. Does that make sense? So we can see the Lord in it, but at the same time as that is a something that allows us to appreciate what is there. You know what I'm saying? Means the gopis see the tamal tree, they think of Krishna. So the material world, because it's actually a reflection of the spiritual, it functions basically on the same principles, though in a temporary fashion. So we're able to see Krishna in everything because we see its connection to the spiritual. Does that make sense? Yeah? So, does that make sense? Any other questions? Okay. Verse 18 again. In this verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.18, the word annam means the result of fruitive actions. And the word atyagat means transcending the three material planetary systems. The Lord is present in the spiritual world. So you also have this element anna, because it's like grains. Grains are wealth. These are the results of results of fruitive actions, right? You're getting a result. So that would mean, like we see in the Taittiriya Upanishad, where Bhrigu is come to the conclusion, aham annam. I am annam. I am, you could say, one you can translate as food, right? Because we're made of food. We eat food, we're made of food, everything like that. But here it's also is the results of our fruitive activities. Right? What we have done before is what creates what I am today. Does that make sense? What I've done in the past, that will create my particular situation, the body that I'm in, everything like that. So that way you could also say, annam is that. Right? Does that make some sense? And then, yeah. The word Esha means the Supreme Lord, whose form is full of immortality and all other opulences. And the word Duratyaya means he whom the Brahmacharis and other transcendentalists cannot understand nor measure by the speculative powers of the mind. Right, means the celibates, then they're able to focus very well. So they can, their intelligence becomes very, very fine. That's why in student life one is celibate, right? Because then the intelligence works, right? Because as soon as it gets involved in family activities, the intelligence isn't as sharp. Right? It can't be as focused because you're dealing with something that changes by the moment, so you have to be able to adjust with that. You know what I'm saying? Well, the brahmacharis, they can just sit and focus on one thing for days at an end. There's nothing to distract them from it. You know what I'm saying? You know, other than it's hot outside or this or that. But that can be ignored. It's not necessary. But in family life, the members of the family, you can't ignore them. You have to deal with them. So that same focus is not there. So that's what I'm saying here. These brahmacharis, by the speculative powers of the mind, they can't know him. Right, so that's as good as it gets. That's the sharpest intelligence will be in that way, and so they cannot understand. Does that make sense? So that's making a serious point. You know, does that make sense? You know, if you say it's so heavy that even an elephant can't pull it, then you go, okay, well that's pretty heavy, right? So here it's saying if the brahmacharis and other transcendentalists cannot understand it, that means he can't be understood by anybody. Right? By the material methods. Does that make sense? Yeah? In this way we have described the eternal spiritual world, which is three quarters of all existence, and the material world, which is subject of destruction, and which is one quarter of all existences. Right? So here he goes back and forth describing the spiritual world and describing the Supreme Lord. Right? So the point is the spiritual world has those qualities because those are the qualities of the Lord. And it's the natural manifestation of the field in which he functions. Does that make sense? Someone creates a field that is akin to their nature. Does that make sense? You have a nature, so the field you're going to function in is going to be what is like you. Otherwise, how do you manifest your qualities? Does that make sense? So the spiritual world, therefore, is non-different from him, in that it is the field in which he performs his pastimes. Is that okay?
Yes.
Yeah. So the material world then is subject to destruction, so that's where it's different. Right? It's not like him, it's the opposite. But it's still it's like him in that it's opposite of what are his qualities. It's not something different. You know what I'm saying? He's immortal, here it's not. He's full of knowledge, here it's not. He's full of happiness, here it's not. So it's based on him. Right? Like an atheist doesn't stand on their own. Right? You're only an atheist because you're against theism. But you can't separate, you're dependent upon. The theist is independent. But the atheist is not independent. His existence depends upon their being theists. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the material energy also, even though it's separate from the Lord, it's still dependent upon him because it is just the inverse of his qualities. Is that okay? Verse 19. Lord Brahma again describes the opulence of the spiritual world, which is three quarters of all existence. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.19. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is to be known as the supreme reservoir of all material opulences by the one-fourth of his energy in which all the living entities exist. Deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from the anxieties of old age and disease exist in the kingdom of God, which is beyond the three higher planetary systems and beyond the material coverings, right? Beyond the three higher planetary systems. So there you're doing Bhurbhuvasva and you're counting them up, so that would be up to Satyaloka. Right? Remember before we had that chart? So you can, if you're saying the three worlds, then you're including, you know, hellish, the middle, and the upper. Like that. Or you take three upper, then that would mean here, the earth, you're not even counting the lower ones. And then the space in between up to Brahmaloka. Right? Does that make sense? So it can be used to describe the same thing in various ways. That's the nice thing about the Vedas, is that because of the connection between all these different things, you're able to you get more opulence. More varieties of ways you can use the same terminology. Because the broadness of what those terminology can do is very great. Yeah? Okay. He is known as the supreme reservoir of all material opulences. So that means they also are coming from him, all these opulences. Right? They're not separate from him. In this verse, Brahma says, the living entities as well as death and other material qualities exist within the material world, which is one quarter of all existence. Stiti pada. All the opulences of the Lord are distributed throughout the three quarters, padeshu, of existence, including both spiritual and material worlds. The living entities, sarva bhutani, including the personal associates of the Lord, reside in all four quarters of creation, including both spiritual and material world. In this verse, Lord Brahma describes the spiritual world, which is three quarters of creation. He says, deathlessness, Amrita, fearlessness, Abhayam, and freedom from anxiety of old age, disease, Kshema, eternally exists, Adhyayi, in the kingdom of God, which is beyond Murdasu, the three higher planetary systems, the material coverings, and the three modes of material nature. The material world is the creation's single quarter part where death and various fruit of actions exist, and above that is the three quarters part of the spiritual world, where there are deathlessness and other auspicious conditions. The spiritual and material worlds are described by the Rig Veda 1093, Nimisha. This is reference to a verse within the Purusha Shukta hymn. Three quarters of existence is the eternal and perfectly opulent spiritual world. The word Divi means Vaikuntha. is the realm where all opulences, eternality, and other auspicious conditions exist. The auspiciousness described here refers to both Vaikuntha and its residents. Right, so here is a very interesting viewpoint, is that we're generally taking it as the one quarter, the three quarters, like that. But here it's just saying that the cosmic creation is divided into four quarters, and the Lord and his opulences are extended into all of that. Right? But the qualities that are the temporary qualities, those are manifest within this quarter, and the eternal qualities are manifested in the other. Does that make sense? Like that. So then one can see is that it's not that we're so much secluded or separate, it's just a matter of it's an inferior place to be. Does that make sense? Because otherwise there's a tendency is that, you know, this is it, and so whatever is our experience, that's the total experience. But actually that experience goes beyond. We're saying three quarters of creation is God conscious. That means only one quarter they're not. Right? So the majority of living entities are God conscious. Does that make sense? So it's not that, oh, there's only some devotees or most people are not. No, most people are God conscious. Only a few are not. Right? Does that make sense? So it changes the perspective here. You know, so it's just, it's all God's creation, just he's the reservoir of all qualities, so those qualities are not considered so, how you say, that are the opposites of those that are considered, that are good qualities, then those are the ones manifest here. So deathlessness is in the spiritual world, while death is here. Fearlessness is there, fear is here. You know, engaging, you know, everything to please the Lord is there. Here it's fruit of activities. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes.
Okay. Nimisha, verse 19 of Canto 2, Chapter 6, then is a specific comment upon the Rig Veda's Purushottam hymn. Okay, so he's showing us how verse 19 is directly dealing with the Rig Veda's Purushottam, so that we see the connection. See, the Purushottam is the hymn on which the whole Veda is manifest. Right? You start with the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That expands into the Kama Gayatri. Right? The Kama Gayatri then expands into all the other Gayatris, you know, down to the Brahma Gayatri. The Brahma Gayatri then, its bead syllable, this Om, then comes through into the material world. It crosses over the Viraja into the material world and comes as Om. So then Om is the start on this side, right? So then from Om expands Bhurbhuva Swa, from that expands the Brahma Gayatri, from that expands the Purushottam, from that expands the Veda. Does that make sense? So everything is included in this Purushottam. So that's why here Bhagavatam is the answer to all this. You know, so it's Purushottam is confirmed that everything is connected to the Lord, right? Because in the primary creation, all it is the Lord, his eternal associates, and then this pastime of creation in the material world, right? So then you get directly the Lord's connection with the material creation. Does that make sense? So everything in the Vedic literatures is to be seen in this light, because it's all expanded from this hymn. Does that make sense? Nowadays it's maybe seen as separate, but it's actually not separate. You can't separate them. Yeah? Okay. Brahma describes the other parts of the three four quarters of existence, the realm of the three material planetary systems, in this words, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.20. The spiritual world, which consists of three-fourths of the Lord's energy, is situated beyond this material world, and it is especially meant for those who will never be reborn. Others who are attached to family life and who do not strictly follow celibacy vows must live within the three worlds. The word cha, and, here means and for all those. In this verse, Brahma says, the spiritual world, which consists of three forces, padas, traya, of the Lord's energy, is situated beyond bahi, the material world, trilokya. This is also explained in the Purusha Shukta, Rig Veda. The spiritual world is three fourths of the Lord's energy. One may ask, who resides in that spiritual world? Brahma answers by saying, the spiritual world is meant to be the residence of those who will never be reborn. Aprajanam ashrama. This means the sannyasis, vanaprastas, and brahmacharis. Or, in other words, those who follow the vow of celibacy. Brahma describes the residence of the material worlds in these words. Others, apara, who are attached to family life, grihameda, who do not strictly follow celibacy vows, abrihadrata, must live within anta, the three material worlds, trilokya. So here, attached to family life, use grihamedina. So this, and so who gets out is the sannyasi, vanaprastha, and brahmacharis, because they're focused on spiritual life. So here then, the grihastha here is meaning attached to family life, means the family life is put as prominent. Does this make sense? The generic term we say grihastha, which simply means someone who is married and has a family. Right? Means one who has a house. Right? So then, but within that, then we see that there's a subdivision of that called grihamedi, which means someone who is attached to the family life, and that is actually the prominence in their consciousness. Does that make sense? Prominence not by volume, prominence by quality. Does that make sense? Someone may be engaged much of the day in household activities, but that doesn't make them a grihamedi, because if pleasing the Lord through those activities is their purpose, that means they're not a grihamedi. But if performing those activities because those are what makes them happy, right? That's grihamedi. That means it's making them happy separate from the Lord. That's grihamedi. Does that make sense? So it's consciousness. Right? So those persons stay here. Right? So even a devotee, if they're attached in this way, then they'll come back and be born again. Right? Does that make sense? The materialists, we know that's what's going to happen to them. You know, but the Bhagavatam is mentioning because this is important for devotees. Does that make sense? Right? So therefore, then everybody's endeavoring to please the Lord, and everyone's endeavoring to, situate themselves so that all of their activities are in connection to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Those persons get out of the material world. But those that are comfortable with it, then they stay here, right? Because if you're comfortable with something, you like to be there. If you're not comfortable, then you like to resituate yourself somewhere else. Does that make sense? Yeah. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the master of both spiritual and material worlds, as Brahma explains to Narada, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.21. By his energies, the all-pervading personality of Godhead is thus comprehensively the master in the activities of controlling and in devotional service. He is the ultimate master of both nescience and factual knowledge of all situations. Yeah. So that means through his energies, then he is the master of everything, both spiritual and material. Right? So that he is also the master of ignorance. Right? Because he still controls it. Right? So he says here, control and devotional service. So in controlling, that means it's just being controlled, it's running. But devotional service means there's that natural reciprocation, there's that affection. Does that make sense? So therefore a distinction is made between The activities where basically it's one-sided because the living entities don't accept him. And the Lord is still the master of the material energy, but that relationship's not recognized. So therefore it's called controlling. And then devotional service in which the devotees recognize the Lord's position and interact with him. Right? So that makes a distinction. So, but he is the master of both. Right? He's still the Lord of both. Is that okay? In this verse, Brahma says, the all-pervading Vishvak, personality of Godhead, Purusha, is thus comprehensively the master, Vichakrame, of the two divisions, Sriti, attained by the living entities. One may ask, what are these two destinations? Brahma answers this question by saying, these two destinations are the enjoyment of the fruits of karma, sasana, and transcending those fruits, panasasane. Oh, it's probably no P. Anasasane, right? Sasana and anasasana. When he describes the method of overcoming the fruits of karma, the word avidya here means the illusory potency, maya, and vidya means the spiritual potency. The Lord is then described as the shelter, ashraya, of both potencies. So, vidyam cha, then means, can mean, you know, knowledge and ignorance. It also means the spiritual world and the material world. Right? So one studies the spiritual world and the material world side by side. Right? Then one starts to see things. So we see he's describing it, the three padas, the one pada. Right? So they're described side by side. Right? From that personality of Godhead, all the universal globes and the universal form, with all material elements, qualities, and senses, are generated. Yet he is aloof from such material manifestations, like the sun which is separated from its rays and heat. In this way, creation may be divided into force, three fourths possessing all opulence, and one fourth possessing partial opulence. The verse quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Brahma to Narada. So, it has some opulence. So the point is, what's being made here is that someone may think that, well, it has opulence, so what's the problem? But the point is it's only partial opulence, but the living entity is not used to partial opulence, it's used to full opulence. Therefore, the living entity can't actually be satisfied here. Right? Does that make sense? You know, if you have a meal and it's not, you're very hungry and it's only enough to partially satisfy, you know, you get a few bites, then even though it was, you know, it had some nice qualities and that, still it's not enough. You won't be satisfied. You won't consider that was a good meal. You know, you come in, you're very hungry, and, you know, you have, you know, yeah, we have 10 preparations here and everything like that, and then we give you, you know, half a spoon of rice and, you know, like that, a quarter spoon of each of the sabjis, and then we say, enjoy. You know, it's kind of like, no, it won't work. Does that make sense? So that's, you know, basically what's going on. Okay. In the same Bhagavat Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami comments upon verse 32 and Ucheda 38 compared to the 32nd purport. At this point, Sri Krishna might raise the following question. At the beginning of universal creation, only Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva were manifest, and they are considered the original causes of everything that exists. During the time of cosmic manifestation, many incarnations also appear, and I may be considered such an incarnation. But how is it possible to say that I am the original cause of all causes? Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu are the original causes. To answer this, Brahma says, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.49. You understand? So Krishna could say, well, it says here that before the creation, Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu are manifest. They're the cause of all causes in this material world. So one could question whether I'm the cause of all causes. Right? So you can understand from this that here you have a very confident person. Right? That he could bring this doubt up. you know, without being disturbed in his own existence. Does that make sense? Yeah? Understand? So, persons who are unaware, so this is Brahma's answers. Persons who are unaware of your inconceivable energy cannot understand that you alone expand yourself as the creator, Brahma, maintainer, Vishnu, and annihilator, Shiva. Persons who are not in awareness of things as they are contemplate that I, Brahma, am the creator. Vishnu is the maintainer and Lord Shiva is the annihilator. Actually, you are alone everything, creator, maintainer, and annihilator, because they come from him. So his potencies to do these three things then come through these three manifestations. Does that make sense? Like that. So in this way we're establishing that Krishna is the supreme. So even Vishnu is an expansion, right? Who is manifesting those particular qualities. Right? But the same, yeah, does that make sense? Right? In this verse, the second person pronoun, tvam, you, is the subject of the sentence. And the word bhasi, or manifest, is the verb. Right? The word eva, as if, does not refer to tvam, but rather to Esha, he, Lord Vishnu. The word Esha does not refer to the transcendental form of Lord Krishna, because Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and not a guna avatar, such as Lord Vishnu is. To consider Sri Krishna as guna avatar would contradict the previous verse, where Brahma said, O Krishna, everything emanates from you. In this verse, the word tvat padavim means your transcendental form. Ajanatam means to those who do not understand. Atma means you, who are the origin of all incarnations of Godhead. Atmana means by your various expansions. Mayam means the potency for creating, maintaining, and annihilating the material universes. Anatmani means in the inert, unconscious, unmanifest three modes of material nature. Pradana, which are the original cause of the Mahat-Tattva, and other forces that cause the creation of the material universes. Vitatya means having expanded, and Bhasi means you are manifested, appearing in different forms according to these different activities of creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material world. Notice it's interesting because he gives these word for word to make it very clear, and Prabhupada uses that same method in his translations. He always gives word for word, because sometimes he sees word for word maybe just one word, but sometimes he'll actually put in a sentence to make it clear. Right, so it's the same method. At this point, Sri Krishna might say, how is it possible that I perform the activities of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva? In order to answer this question, Brahma says, you appear as if you are me, who am engaged in the activities of universal creation. Jagata Srishtvaham. You appear as if you are Vishnu, who is engaged in the activities of universal maintenance. Virane Esha Iva, and you also appear as if you are Shiva, who is engaged in the activities of universal destruction. Ante Trinetra Iva. In truth, you expand yourself in these various forms. Only they who are foolish and bewildered see these three demigods as different from you. So Madhvacharya makes this point also, is that all the demigods actually is the Lord's potency. So when you talk about the demigod, that's just the post that's getting it done. That's the particular post holder that's doing it, but it's the Lord's potencies that are actually doing the work. So whenever there's praise of the demigods or talk about the demigods, the devotee knows that it's Krishna, it's Vishnu. So he just remembers him. Right? He's not interested in the demigod himself. That's not his purpose, because he knows he's only able to do that activity because he is the officer who is applying Krishna's potencies in this area. Does that make sense? That Sri Krishna performs the activities of creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material universe is confirmed by the following verse of Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.32, where Lord Brahma says, by his will I create. Lord Shiva destroys, and he himself in his eternal form as the personality of Godhead maintains everything. He is the powerful controller of these three energies. Right? Okay. From this verse we may understand that Lord Vishnu is the direct manifestation of the personality of Godhead, and thus he is essentially non-different from the transcendental form of Sri Krishna. Vishnu is therefore different from Brahma and Shiva, who are not direct manifestations of the personality of Godhead, but are of a different category. So now even here he's making the point that it's all Krishna. It means it's his potencies that are doing it, so it's non-different. So he's the original source. Still within this, Vishnu is non-different from Krishna. Right? It's just not as full a manifestation, but he's non-different. Brahma and Shiva are in their own categories. Right? As something less. Right? So you see how he's doing it? He's taking it one by one. He's establishing Krishna, that he is actually the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. Then once that's established, then he's showing that, well, of that, then Vishnu is actually non-different, and Brahma and Shiva are separate. So then he's bringing, you know, everything onto Krishna, and everything onto Krishna's, putting everything in how his order of expansion, you know what I'm saying? His incarnations that are direct, and then indirect, which are just carrying some of his potencies. Does that make sense? Verse 38 is discussed in Krishna Sandarbha, Anucheda 43. That Sri Krishna is the original source of all the incarnations of Godhead is confirmed in the following description found in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.1.22.24. While in trance, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the demigods, "O demigods, hear from me the order of Kiradakshaya Vishnu, the Supreme Person, and execute it attentively without delay." Lord Brahma informed the demigods, "Before we submit our petition to the Lord, he was already aware of the distress on earth. Consequently, for as the Lord moves on earth to diminish its burdens by his own potency in the form of time, all of you demigods should appear through plenary portions as sons and grandsons in the family of the Yadus. The original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has full potency, will personally appear as the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, all the wives of the demigods should also appear in order to satisfy him." In this verse, text 22, the word Paurushim means by the Purusha avatar. In the passage beginning with the word Pura, text 3 and 4, Brahma repeats the message originally spoken by the Purusha avatar. That Sri Krishna appears as the Purusha avatar, Lord Vishnu, is confirmed in the following statement of Lord Brahma. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.32. By Krishna's will I create and Lord Shiva destroys. Krishna himself in his eternal form as the Purusha incarnation maintains everything. He is the powerful controller of these three energies. We may note, however, that the word Pumsa in verse 22 means by Sri Krishna, the original personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in the words of Brahma Samhita 5.39. Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. The word Amshai, used in text 3, may be understood to mean that Sridham, Sudham, Uddhava, Satyaki, and the other associates of the Lord are all actually demigods, who are considered to be like the limbs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is elaborately explained in the following verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.1.62.63. The inhabitants of Vrindavan, headed by Nanda Maharaj, and including his associates, cowherd men and their wives, are none but denizens of the heavenly planets. O Maharaj Parikit, best of the descendants of Bharata, and so too were the descendants of the Rishni dynasty, headed by Vasudeva and Devaki, and the other women of the Yadu dynasty. The friends and relatives and well-wishers of both Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva, and even those who externally appeared to be followers of Kamsa, were all demigods. In the 85th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is described as the all-pervading Supersoul. He is addressed as Purusha and Triadisha, which indicates that he is the original source of all incarnations of Godhead. This is summarized in the following statement of Maharaj Vasudeva's Srimad Bhagavatam 10.85.18. My dear Krishna and Balaram, I know that neither of you are my sons. You are the original chief and progenitor, the original personalities of Godhead known as Pradhan and Purusha. But you have appeared on the surface of this globe in order to minimize the burden of the world by killing the Kshatriya kings, were unnecessarily increasing their military strength. In this quote from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.1.22, found in Anucheda 43, the word Svakala Saktya means by his own potency, the time factor. In the same verse, the word Ishvareshvara means the original personality of Godhead. By repeating the Supreme Lord's instructions in these verses, Brahma intends to say to the demigods, there's no need to make any further request in this matter, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead will solve the difficulty. Okay, so he's pointing out that the demigods are going to Krishna, and that he already knows what they're coming for and has already made the arrangements. So then he's asking that they all appear, because the Lord appears with his potencies, his energies, right? So in the spiritual world, all his potencies are manifest as the different devotees there. Is that right? And then he has pastimes with them. So the Lord is coming for his pastimes here. The demigods are that, you know, further expansion of those internal devotees, right? Krishna has his devotees in Vrindavan. They expand as, you know, the residents of Mathura and Dwarka. They expand as the residents of Vaikuntha, right? When the Lord comes to the material world, the Purusha avatars, he comes with those same associates that have expanded from Vaikuntha, right? Then, now those, he's going to come and perform his pastimes, so, oh, excuse me, and then those, like, original, how you'd say, demigods expand into the demigods of this realm, right? So then, when he's going to perform his pastimes here, then those demigods come manifest and he performs his pastimes with them. Does that make sense? Right? So that's why they would all come and take birth. Now, at the same time, as we see, is that he's saying Nanda Maharaj and all them are also, you know, these demigods. So this would function in two ways. One is for a few ways. One is for those who can't understand the spiritual world and understand that there's something special, so they won't deal with them improperly. Another is that when the incarnation, because every Kali, every Dwapara Yuga, the incarnation is Krishna, right? And so that means then he's going to perform his pastimes. But only once in a day of Brahma is it the original personality of Godhead. So that means 999 of the Dwapara Yugas is Krishna, meaning like a Vaikuntha form. So then Nanda Baba and all them, they are in that way then considered the expansions of the demigods. Does this make sense? Right? But in the day when Krishna appears himself in his full form, then technically they're expanded from the spiritual world. Right? But it's not wrong that one would say is that the demigods have expanded, but those demigods are their expansion. So now if they manifest again through that, does that make sense? The material energy is expanded from Krishna into the deity form. Right? It means the Lord has expanded, you have the material energy, we've made a deity out of material energy. But then it's his energy, and then he can manifest in it as himself, the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense? So the demigods are expansions of those original associates, so they can manifest through those expansions if they like. Does that make sense? So you can take it in both ways. You know, we understand as those original persons, but the mechanics of it may be is that they're manifesting through those, through the demigods that are expansions of them anyway. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Are the demigods a mix of those eternal associates and conditioned souls?
Are the demigods a mix of the eternal associates and conditioned souls? Means there's a condition, means the demigod is a post. It's a set post that has its potencies, it has its, you know, duties, it has its abilities, it has its facilities, has its particular look, everything. Like Purusha Shukta, you know, is mentioning that the demigods offer these various prayers to the Lord, the Suktas, to get their opulence, their power, their chariots, their facilities, everything like that. So that's what's expanded from the Lord and his associates. But a jiva then holds that post. Does that make sense? So it's not a combination of their qualities, it's just there's a jiva doing that post, like you have the king. So the king has particular post and power, but depending upon the particular living entity that's there, you may find them to be a good king or a bad king or this or that, but still they're working within the realm of the king. You know what I'm saying? So like that. Then. Is that answer?
So the position expands from the spiritual world.
The position, the potency is expanded from the eternal associates of the Lord. Yeah. Like that. Does that make sense? Srila Jiva Goswami discusses verse 42 in Bhagavad Sandarbha Anucheda 97. He states that it establishes Mahavishnu as the first Purusha of Lord Krishna and helps establish Krishna as the original speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam compared to 42nd purport. The first Purusha incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and he is Karanadakshay Vishnu is the first incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and he is the master of eternal time, space, cause and effects, mind, the element, the material ego, the modes of nature, the senses, the universal form of the Lord, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and the sum total of all living beings, both moving and non-moving. Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary, in this verse, the word Parasya means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the word Purusha means the Purusha incarnation, who creates the material world. The first Purusha incarnation, Karanadakshay Vishnu, is described in the Rig Veda 1091. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then appeared as the first Purusha incarnation, who had thousands of faces, eyes, and feet. Expanding in all directions, the Purusha incarnation exceeded the dimensions of the universe by the measurement of 10 fingers. Right? Das Angulam. Right? Heard that before? Never heard of it. Oh, you just didn't catch it. You've heard it, you just don't know it. Okay. And so, right? So this element, we may also note in the connection that the Lord accepts the form of the Purusha incarnation, Adyo Vatara, in order to enjoy transcendental pastimes. So it's the Lord that's expanding before he's already established that Lord Vishnu is non-different from Krishna, right? And so therefore all these qualities that are there he takes care of, because Krishna doesn't personally take care of him, he takes care of him as his expansion, right? Because Krishna is busy in Vrindavan with his eternal associates. So these lesser manifestations of his opulence he doesn't have to be directly involved with. He can expand and take care of it in that way. Does that make sense? Right? So therefore then you even see this, he expands his thousands of that. He's talking about Karanadakshay Vishnu, but it's Garbhodakshay Vishnu who is expanding as the universal form. That's where the thousands of heads and arms and eyes and that come, right? There's also known as the thousand-headed Purusha, right? The Sahasrashirsha Purusha. So that Vishnu form lives with Lord Brahma, right? Just like Vamanadeva lives with Indra, so the thousand-headed Purusha lives with Lord Brahma, because he deals with all the creation, right? He is the creation. So Brahma, because he deals with creation, his inspiration for creation is coming from Krishna's creation. Does that make sense? So he's inspired by the thousand-headed form to perform his activities. Right? So we see here is what we're talking about, Karanadakshay Vishnu, but it's Garbhodakshay Vishnu that expands this. So then we can understand it's Karanadakshay Vishnu who expands as Garbhodakshay Vishnu and does these things. Right? In the same way, we can say it's Karanadakshay Vishnu who expanded from Mahanarayan, is expanded from Balaram, is expanded from Krishna. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So they're simultaneously different but non-different. Right? Different in the manifestation, but actually it's the same person. Yeah? You know, like sometimes you may dress up in one way for one occasion and dress up in another way for another occasion. So the manifestation is different, but the person is the same. Right? You know, it's not like, yeah, does that make sense? And so in one form, it fits one situation. Does that make sense? You know, like you put on your gumsha and you're ready to go to the Ganga. So it matches that, but you don't put on your gumsha and now ready to go to the temple. You understand? You know, but you don't put on your best dhoti and all your pavitras and cheddars and everything and put on a nice turban and all that to go bathe in the Ganga. Does that make sense? So, but you're the same person. So in the same way, Krishna is the same person, but he manifests in all these ways so that he can perform all these different functions. Is that clear? Yes.
When devotees pray to Krishna, what aspect of the Lord hears them?
When they pray to Krishna, what aspects of the Lord hears them means whatever aspect they're talking to. Yeah. Like that. You know, like Brahma is mentioning here that you are you're the creator, you're the destroyer, because that's what he's involved in. So that's the kind of prayers he'll offer. So then Krishna excuse me, will reciprocate that mood. Does that make sense? So the point is you're always dealing with Krishna, but it's just depending upon your mood, then he'll manifest in one way or one form or another. Does that make sense? But it's always Krishna. Like that. Any other questions on this? Something? Yes? No? Very good. Is this making sense or is this getting... Yeah? Yeah? I mean, is it over everybody's head, or it just makes sense, or everybody's quiet, or why is everybody quiet?
If you can follow it in the book, there's certain points that make sense. If you don't have a book, then it's a little bit hard to.
Okay. You have a book?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So anything else, or? No? Okay, so then we'll continue tomorrow. I hope. Guntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.